Welcome back. In 1838, the Maryland Jesuits sold 272 enslaved people to plantations in Louisiana, a transaction that paid off Georgetown University's debts. Today, Georgetown is reckoning with that stain on its history, granting priority admission to descendants of the 272, renaming buildings named after university leaders who participated in the sale, issuing a formal apology for its complicity in slavery, and more. Last week, the student body voted overwhelmingly to approve a non-binding referendum to pay a per-student, per-semester reconciliation fee into a fund that would benefit the descendants of the people enslaved by the university. What does the outcome of the vote mean for an institution seeking to take responsibility for its history? Joining me in studio is Melisande Short Colomb. She is a student at Georgetown University and a descendant of one of the 272 people enslaved sold in the 1838 sale. Melisande, good to see you again.
It's good to see you too, Kojo. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming. Also joining us in studio is Dr. Maurice Jackson. He's an associate professor of history at Georgetown University. He was also a member of the university's working group on slavery, memory, and reconciliation, which produced recommendations on how the university should respond to its history of slavery. Maurice, always a pleasure.
My pleasure indeed.
If you have questions or comments, are you a member of the Georgetown University community? Do you agree with the student vote? Give us a call, 800-433-8850. Do you think institutions should consider to take steps to reckon with and atone for their complicity in slavery? Melisande, what exactly did students vote to support last week?
Last week, Georgetown University students voted to support what we call a reconciliation fund to the tune of $27.20 per semester, which is 0.1% of the total tuition per semester at Georgetown University of $27,722 per semester. So this is 0.1% of the cost per semester of tuition at Georgetown. And the students voted to put this money into a fund to create an endowment that will last for the next 180 years, the same way that the endowment of enslaved people and people who were sold has lasted 180 years.
You're one of the students leading the GU 272 advocacy team, which developed the idea for the referendum in the first place. Take us through how and why you came up with the idea.
Well, I can't say that I am the leader of the team. I am a member of the team, and we have supported one another in goals to hold the university and the student body, hold a mirror up to how we memorialize, how we reflect, how we grow and continue to acknowledge the involuntary founders of Georgetown University. In 2016, President DeGioia pledged that Georgetown University would be active in reconciling its slaveholding, human trafficking, negligent past, and the university meant every student and faculty member and graduate student and law school student and medical school student at Georgetown University.
What did the student body's decision mean to you as a student and as a descendant yourself?
First, as a descendant and representative descendant student on Georgetown's campus, I feel a tremendous amount of pride in the students who took the initiative to be creative in the absence of leadership and a clear plan of something to do. They created a plan, and then they brought that plan to fruition through hard work, education, engagement with students, creating a brand, putting it out there. And the students and the parents of these students administrators and university should be so proud. And we as Americans should be proud of what these students have done. They made history.
Well, not today. You are one of them yourself. Maurice Jackson, you were a member of the university's working group on slavery, memory, and reconciliation. You were tasked with studying the university's history and making recommendations for how it might respond to it today. Given that context, what was your reaction to the referendum?
Well, my first reaction was thinking about Dr. King and how he quoted Gandhi. And the quote was, "There go my people, I must catch them." In this case, there go the students, and the university administration must catch up with them. I think they led by example. I think they felt that the university was not moving fast enough. And young people are impatient. We were young, we were impatient. They have the right to be impatient. And they were impatient. Some people said, they were trying to find the flaws and these things of the resolution. But that wasn't the important thing. The important thing was they took the initiative. And now, here's the thing, that this is being looked at all over the world. Every newspaper. Melody just told me that a newspaper in Malta has an article about it. The Guardian, thousands of papers, the New York Times, and it's being discussed. And it's being discussed on campuses throughout the country. And it's being discussed, when Ta-Nehisi Coates had the piece in the Atlantic, reparations started discussing. Now the presidential candidates are discussing it. And Kojo, you and I have been around long enough. We remember as young people, there was something called the Republic of New Africa. They had a program. Robert Brown had a program. In the 30s, the Communist Party had the Black Belt Theory. It's been around as long as we've existed. But now it's coming to a crucial point. It's been discussed in the elections and all these things. And Georgetown students are doing what students should do. They're making noise and they're being heard.
What were the recommendations from the working group? Has the university taken any steps towards implementing those recommendations?
Well, the first recommendation was that the names be changed, and the university immediately took that to task. The recommendations were to give students legacy status. That is being discussed. But now, legacy status, it sounds good, but it doesn't mean that much always. For example, if you're from Marin, Gwinn, Louisiana, and if you've gotten a very poor education, as I did in the South, the chances are you're going to have the board scores and the grades to get into a place like Georgetown are pretty dim. So it sounds good, but it's not necessarily there. So what Georgetown has to do is take this and adapt to it so we can help those kids who may need additional help to get into a place like Georgetown. One of the most important things that that the working group recommended was the establishment of an institute for the study of slavery. And this can be key, because this can go back and take the recommendations of the committee and the recommendations of Melisandre's group and look deep into the roots of slavery at Georgetown in Washington and have a policy. This, the university is a bit slow on, and this is what we're looking at next, in addition to many other things which I can talk about.
I was going to ask you about the mood on campus, but let me hear from Tom in Fairfax, Virginia, who self-identifies as a Georgetown graduate. Tom, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I'm a proud graduate of the Law School of Georgetown, and I am so happy and proud of the Georgetown students for taking the lead on this issue. I'll be honest, I'm not a big supporter of reparations in general. That's another debate. But in this case, I think there's a definite identifiable wrong, and it needs to be remedied. And I would call on my fellow graduates to kick in money as well, that we have been beneficiaries of this tragedy, and therefore we should, send money and try to help this effort. And so I want to congratulate the students for taking the lead, and I hope the administration will follow.
Thank you very much for your call, Tom. Melisande, what's the mood like on campus? Have you been hearing from a lot of students about what they think?
We have. Students are happy, and they're pleased, and congratulating one another. And everybody I see, I say thank you for voting. And I am not so much invested or was not invested so much in the outcome of the vote, although we hoped it would be yes, and it has been yes. It was the process. And sometimes we forget that the goal is not the win or the loss. It is the work that goes into creating awareness. And no matter what the vote was, yes or no, we cannot deny that everybody is aware. Everybody is happily aware right now. Some people aren't happy with the vote and may contest it and find issue with it. But in the absence of an idea, a thought, a plan, if the only thing that you can say is that what somebody else has thought of is wrong and you don't have a reasonable plan for that or replacement, then okay, you disagree. You're entitled to that.
You have chosen not to characterize the fee as reparations.
No, it is not that.
Why?
There is no repair to a community, a people, a society in the midst of crumbling. So in order for disenfranchised communities and people and culture to be repaired in America, we have to repair the other side of that as well, because I can't be whole when I have crumbling all around me. So there has never been, when the Constitution was written, it was a flawed document. And we have had many amendments to the Constitution that have made us better because of the amendments to the Constitution, not the original document.
Well, Maurice Jackson, a lot of media outlets refer to the reconciliation fee, if Georgetown implements it, as the first example of a slavery reparations policy from a major American institution. And as you mentioned, all of this is happening against the backdrop of a national conversation about reparations. Some Democratic hopefuls in particular are talking for the first time about reparations. Where does this fit into the conversation about reparations?
Well, I think it fits in with maybe the simple term we should use is reparative justice. It is a way that the students have put forth, no matter what you call it. It is an example of using some funds to help a people who've suffered because of people were enslaved at Georgetown. So we can, figure on the terms. But this certainly does lead people to say what can be done. Now, this comes in the midst of the Henry Louis Gates series on PBS on Reconstruction. I urge people to just pay attention. You know, this goes back even farther. In 1762, a man named Anthony Benizet wrote a little pamphlet, "What Shall Be Done with the Negroes?" And what he meant by that was, if we free these blacks who've been enslaved, what shall we do to help them be able to survive in a culture that they know nothing of? They don't know to read and write. And he put forth examples. And Thomas Paine wrote something called African Slavery in America in 1775. And Frederick Douglass in 1862, right around the same time that Lincoln issued a proclamation, made a speech to the Freedmen's National Association, around the same thing. We must find ways to help a people who have been so maltreated. So this is a part of this discussion. And so the big thing is how should we solve the problems of the day? And what should we do? Because as Lyndon Johnson said at Howard University in 1965, you can't ask a mule to catch up. You can't ask a man with a mule to catch up with a man with a caterpillar. And if I said that to most people, they think I'm talking about a bug, but I'm talking about a big tractor. And so you have to give people some aid. You can't ask a person on the one-yard line to catch up with a person who's born on a 99-yard line. So this is the beginning of a serious discussion about that.
Here now is Judd in or near Washington. Judd, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi. Thanks, Kojo. You have a great show, as always. I think the students should be proud of themselves for bringing this to people's attention. But I have some concerns about the idea of how this money would be used. there are a lot of things about slavery that if we could all make over, we would do it, but we can't. But the people that need the help the most are the people who are worst off in the African-American community. I doubt that you can really figure out a way to trace the families of all of these slaves and figure out who are the ones that really need the help the most. I think that's something.
Well, allow me to put that in the form of a question, because another descendant, Jessica Tilson, told Politico that what her town in Louisiana needs is, quoting here, something that Georgetown students cannot provide, and that's jobs. If implemented, this fund would bring in about $400,000 a year, which feels like a drop in the bucket in the light of the generations of wealth that slavery took from you and other descendants. So what does this money represent?
Okay, that's a very good question. This money does not provide the opportunity for the caterpillar. What this fund will do is, on Georgetown's campus, create an economic base to build partnerships between students at Georgetown University and the descendant community. Reparations look like many things. Reparations are not rolling up to the front gate of the university and picking up your check for $27.20. What we hope to do is create partnerships with other communities, other descendants, microloans. We have elderly people in our community. And one of the most incredible things about the history of Georgetown slaveholding is that there are more people in Maryland who are descendants of Jesuit and Georgetown slaveholding than there are in Maringouin, Louisiana. We have large communities in Baltimore, Anne Arundel County, St. Mary's County. There are no hierarchies. There were no hierarchies in slavery. So the people who were sold to Louisiana in 1838 came from families who remained enslaved by the Jesuits until 1865. So there are 4,000 living descendants of Georgetown slaveholding alive today who are clearly identified and connected to Jesuit and Georgetown slaveholding.
Maurice Jackson, the university declined to send a representative for this discussion, but they did direct us to a statement acknowledging the results of the referendum from the university president. In part, it reads, quoting here, "This moment raises complex issues that we are prepared to grapple with and embrace. Our students are bringing attention to deeply held convictions that we take very seriously. With this strong indication from our students, I will engage key leaders in our Georgetown, descendant, and Jesuit communities and our faculty, board, and student leadership to chart a path forward." Maurice, part of the working group report reads, quoting here, "While we acknowledge that the moral debt of slaveholding and the sale of enslaved people can never be repaid, we are convinced that the reparative justice requires a meaningful financial commitment from the university." What would a meaningful financial commitment look like?
Thank you, Coach. Just a couple of things to that. Jessica Tilson, who's I've visited the place in Maryland, and I can tell you that jobs are needed. Here's the problem. Is I just did a study for the city of Washington. I did it for the university in the past. It's been very well received. The problem, and you've seen it, and the problem is that one has to be skilled for certain jobs. And the problem in a place like Maringouin is that the schools are like the schools I went to in Alabama many years ago. That it's a report, the student's report said that the median income is $37,000. I don't believe it. I think it's much less than that. So you have economic conditions that are just, quite frankly, backwards. And so what happened now, the university is meeting with the Jesuits and also the descendants to solve bigger problems, economic problems, because the Catholic Church has responsibility. What can the university do? The university has to do what universities do best, and that is to teach. The university has expertise to go into the communities and work with them. I put forth a proposal, and I hope the university takes it seriously, is that there you have some of the leading black Jesuit schools in the country. Xavier and Dillard and places like that. The Georgetown work with these schools to help train people. Georgetown has one of the best medical schools in the country. And Xavier has the highest rate of black kids going to college, medical school, anywhere in the country. Georgetown has to partner with that school to aid and build students there. So it's all kind of thing. This costs money. Education costs money. And the university, I think people think that all of a sudden Georgetown's going to put money on the table. It's not. I can tell you that. But what it can do is do what it can open up the school to better aid young kids who are in the 8th and 9th and 10th grade of new education and work with the Jesuits down there in schools and create conditions where these kids can qualify to come to a place like Georgetown. And when you get here, it's like Everett Dirksen says, now you're talking about real money.
Melisande, the referendum itself was non-binding. Yes. If the fee is to be implemented, it'll be through the university administration and board of directors. What are your next steps?
Well, this is the end of the semester, and we have worked as students very, very hard over the last two semesters. As students, we have finals coming up. Some of our students are going to be graduating. And for the next few weeks, we're going to be students, and we're going to finish up our school year. Our goal has been met. We began something, and we ended something, and we ended it in a really, really good place. And we are going to allow the process while remaining active and involved. But we are now ready to partner and to begin this process that we started. And I'm sure there will be people who contest it along the way. It is non-binding. The university could, the board of directors could just say no. They might. And then we'll see what happens.
Well, we got a tweet from someone who says, why are current students paying this debt? I'm sure Georgetown has a multi-billion-dollar endowment. But as you said, Maurice Jackson, it's not just about putting money on the table. It's what are the most important resources that Georgetown and other universities have.
I would like to say, too, that everything that the Jesuits and institutions have built over centuries as American institutions, the Jesuits sold people and enslaved people for the students.
And so in the final analysis,
what is Georgetown in the absence of students? What is any college or institution or university in the absence of students?
Melisande Short Colombe is a student at Georgetown University and a descendant of one of the 272 enslaved people sold in the 1838 sale. Good to see you again. Thank you for joining us.
Good to see you too, Kojo.
Dr. Maurice Jackson is an associate professor at History of Georgetown University, who is a member of the university's working group on slavery, memory, and reconciliation. Maurice, always a pleasure.
Thank you, Kojo.
Our show about Georgetown Vote was produced by Margaret Barthel, and our conversation about school safety was produced by Sidney Grannon. Coming up tomorrow, Maryland Governor Larry Hogan is planning to add new toll lanes to the Capitol Beltway and Interstate 270, a move that would affect 1,500 properties and result in the demolition of 24 homes and 4 businesses. Has highway widening helped ease traffic in our region? We'll take a deep dive into this plan and look at lessons learned from Northern Virginia. It all starts tomorrow at noon. Until then, thank you for listening. I'm Kojo Namdi.
WAMU 88.5 is your listener-supported NPR news station in the greater Washington, D.C. region. You can support the Kodjo Namdi Show and all the regional coverage you value by becoming a member today. Click the donate button at WAMU.org, and thanks.